Doesn't it feel wonderful in this very room? Can't you feel that presence? I'm covered with goosebumps right now. And now, the gift of special music.
I'd like to say a few words before I begin. I just returned from a wonderful trip, and then Monday decided to hit the ground running, looking for a song about hope. And the lyrics to this song were in an email. And I read them, and it had quite an impact on me. And I thought, I'll find the song. And I thought it's by a French composer, so I thought it would be ethereal, kind of like Debussy. But no, it was jazz. And which can be beautiful. I mean, Barbra Streisand has a gorgeous rendition online. Little intimidating. So, but it was minor and, you know, the dissonant harmonies. And so I'm going to do something I've never done before. And I'm going to give a little bit of what I hope is an ethereal background. And I'm going to recite the lyrics because I want you to just hear the words. So, fingers crossed. Because I thought, what can be more hopeful than that seed that beneath the cold earth and the snow, waiting for spring? When lonely feelings chill the meadows of your mind, just think, if winter comes, can spring be far behind? Beneath the deepest snows, the secret of a rose is merely that it knows you must believe in spring. Just as a tree is sure its leaves will reappear, it knows its emptiness is just a time of year. The frozen mountain dreams of April's melting streams. How crystal clear it seems, you must believe in spring. Of the spheres, and children face a world that's far beyond their years. Above the darkest sky, the far horizons lie with all the reasons why you must believe in spring. It's on its way. Just as a sleeping rose awaits the kiss of May, so in a world of snow, of things that come and go, where what you think you know, you can't be certain of, you must believe in spring.
For blessing us with that leap of faith. Wasn't that beautiful? Thank you. Thank you. Oh, hope. Last week, I started the first half of 15 Principles of Hope that I got from Rebecca Sonlett, when I was doing the Transcending Difficult Times workshop. As I was putting things together, I came across this, and I absolutely loved it because it starts with despair is not a strategy, which I love. It isn't. It's being stuck. And so a strategy is, okay, if I want to get from here to there, how do I do it? And the power of hope is what leads us, and when we get stuck, can help us take that step in the right direction. Or the step in some direction that we may decide, oh, that's not it. Let me try this one. And so the power of hope is so profoundly important. The reading today that is in the Advent guide included talking about the man at the pool of Bethesda and the denying the power. And I've always loved that story because Jesus goes up to him, and this guy has been laying beside the pool at Bethesda forever. By the way, they have found the physical archaeological location of the portico of the five pools near one of the major gates in the holy city. So this place existed for sure. And metaphysically, it represents where physical healing and spiritual healing come together. It doesn't have to be either or. This was a place of physical healings, but also of spiritual healing. So this guy is there, and he's laying beside the pool for like 30 years, I think it is. And whoever gets into the pool first, when the waters stir, is the one that's healed. How he managed to go for 30 years with never being the first one in the water, it showed that he really wasn't ready to be healed. He was attached to where things were, and so he was laying beside the pool, and you'd think he could roll in really quick. Never made it in. So Jesus comes in to do healings, and he walks up to the man, and does he pick him up and go put him in the water of the pool? No. He said, it's not about the pool. What he asks is a wonderful question. Do you want to be made well? That was the core soul question. And so the guy, I'm sure, it says he came up with all kinds of excuses. Well, you know, I'm kind of used to this, and I really kind of like this mat. It's a new one. I'm kind of attached to it. And I tried all these years to get in the water, and I couldn't get in the water. And Jesus just said, stop. Take up your mat and walk. It was kind of the biblical version of Nike's just do it. And the guy did. He picked up his mat and he walked. In that moment, he let go of despair. And Jesus, when he said, do you want to be made well, or is actually saying, do you have the hope that this is even possible? And because of the light that Jesus emanated, and I believe drew forth from us. He drew forth from that man, and that guy said, yeah, I can. I have hope. I can get up. I can move forward. All of us get stuck at different points in our lives. We're laying beside a pool of Bethesda with all kinds of reasons to stay there, and all it takes is someone coming with love and light and saying, do you want to be made well? Yes. Do you want to go from what you're familiar with into something new? Maya Angelou says, love recognizes no barriers. It jumps hurdles, leaps fences, penetrates walls to arrive at its destination full of hope. Isn't that beautiful? I was working as an assistant to the national director of a major insurance company's case management program. And a dear friend of mine was diagnosed with a highly malignant brain tumor and literally given weeks to live. She ended up having surgery and lasting long enough to move back home to Minnesota and getting her son set up with all of her brothers and sisters and her parents before she died. But with that, I found myself praying, I want to do what it is I've been sent to do. I was doing volunteer work. I was one of eight people in Dallas that was selected to train as a volunteer chaplain at Parkland Hospital. They picked people from all their, I was a Methodist at that point, and they brought us all and they trained us. And I found that I loved what I was doing there. I was in the hospital that I was so familiar with, having been a nurse, but I was looking at it past the embodiment into the spiritual element of what was going on, and I loved it. So I had said this prayer, and then I go into work. There's been a corporate takeover about a month before, and they call me in and they say, we're sorry we're having to lay you off because we're going to reframe this whole division. So pack up your bags, we're going to give you a severance check, and bye-bye. I sat there at my desk, I still remember it, just in shock. And people were coming up in tears going, Pam, what are we going to do without you? You can't, why did they let you go? We know they're restructuring, but they offered me something that ethically I couldn't do. So I said, no, I said, you know what's funny? I'm sitting here. Part of me is like, what am I going to do? I'm my only source of my own income. How am I going to pay my rent? What am I going to do? And what came and what I ended up telling them was, yes, I'm scared, but I think I ask for this. I was supposed to go train at Unity Dallas in their leadership training program the following Monday. This was on a Friday. Over the weekend, I was like, what am I going to do? I shouldn't go do that because I don't even know if I'm going to be staying in Dallas. But Spirit kept saying go, so I went. And that was the night that I heard about Unity Village and going to study at Unity Village for your own spiritual growth, or to go and maybe become a licensed Unity teacher, or to be a Unity minister. Never thought about that option at that point. And it was as though the room did like it does in the movies, where everything disappears. And this presence came and said, if you want to walk this path, this is the portal. This is why you've gone through a divorce with a bankruptcy. This is why you were never blessed to have children. Biologically, this is why you've done all of the soul work and career work up to this point to bring it into this, if you're willing. If you don't want to do it, it's okay. We'll give you all of that back. We'll give you a job making more money than you were making. You'll be fine. Your choice. I think it's pretty obvious which one I chose. And so I said, yes. I said, yes, I'm open. And it turned out that they were starting classes at Unity Village 2 weeks later. I packed up my entire life in Dallas, went and put it at my parents' mother-in-law's suite in Austin, and drove all the way to Kansas City all by myself. Longest trip I'd ever made alone. To go study for a month. So I studied for a month and I loved it. And I went back in the spring and loved it. And one of the things that I did as part of this was I spent some time with Dorothy Curtis, who was one of the two ministers at Unity Dallas. And this was on the wall in her office. It's called the Morning Star. This to me was hope pictured and possibilities pictured. And I went in to meet with her to talk about whether I should study to be a licensed teacher or not. And she was late, and so her assistant said, go in and just sit in Dorothy's office. She wouldn't mind, and she'll be here as soon as she can. I saw this picture and fell in love with it and into it. And when Dorothy came in, the whole time I talked to her, I was thinking about this picture. And she was the one that said, yes, you should definitely go, but don't limit yourself to being a licensed Unity teacher. You could do that, but I think your path is even broader than that. But God will probably take you in small steps so you can deal with it. That's a nice thing about hope. It can come in small steps. So let me read you the back of this. Because what happened was, after I was ordained and graduated, I went to work at Unity in Denton. She would come as a guest speaker, and one Sunday she arrived, and she said, I'm moving to Florida with my grandchildren. I have a couple of things in the car I don't know if you want. Please don't feel like you have to take them. But if you're interested, I just felt like these should come to you. This was what was in the trunk of her car, along with one of Don's silver pieces. Isn't that amazing? I burst into tears, and I said, you have no idea what this means. I want to read the back of it. This is called the Morning Star. This is hope. Hope. It is the hour before the dawn. Darkness, confusion, and humanity anxiously awaiting for the light. At last, after so many ages of striving, of regretting, of praying before empty shrines, at last the messenger comes, the morning star, herald of the day of liberation. His head covered with a helmet of inspiration, his eyes face infinity and eternity. Eternity and infinity gaze through his eyes. In his hands, the star of wisdom, the morning star, the flame that will burn up all human sorrow. Clothed in white linen, the symbol of the purity of his purpose and the simplicity of his presence. And his shoulders broad enough to carry the world's burdens, his arms strong enough to fight ignorance and fear. The messenger strides onwards, overcoming the night, trampling down prejudice and confusion, stupidity and apathy, and leaving in their stead a wake of loveliness, symmetry, reason, and power. His knowledge dominates the four elements of nature, air, fire, earth, and water. They are all conquered and made obedient to his word. The double star, the star of sorrow, becomes the star of joy and is the device engraven on the lintel above his head. He is the messenger, the master of the hour, the one in whom are embodied all who strive for the advancement and liberations of their brothers and sisters. He it is who carries the light. He it is who carries the light, who carries hope. And so I'm going to now continue with the principles of hope, the strategies of hope. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 left. And again, each one I've matched with one of my favorite quotes to just make it come alive. And I'll be sure that all of these are sent to Beverly so they'll be on the internet. Not only the principles, but also the quotes, because I've had a number of you say, please give me the quotes too. So, principles of hope. that let us see the light and be the light, whatever we're facing. Number 9, we can change the world because we have many times before. I'm a student of history and a reader, and I love to see, even though we have far to go, how far we've come, consciousness-wise, just in my lifetime. I was born in 51, and I'm amazed at the growth and shifts in society, in equality, in spirituality that have come just since I took that first breath, much less going back in time. And there are waves where things come and go, and there's you make steps forward and then you seem to go backwards and then you go forwards again. But think of how you've changed yourself and your world already so many times by this point. And we have done it collectively many times before. Margaret Mead says, "Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has." So what we do may seem small, but when it goes into the collective pool of consciousness, it unites with others and it uplifts one and all. So we can't say, "Oh, it's always going to be the same," because that's the one thing I can promise you won't happen. Quantum physics said life is constant change. Nothing ever disappears. Nothing's ever lost. It's constantly changing shape and energetic form. And so we get attached to this, but it's really the change when you look back on your life. Those are the moments where you learned and you grew and your eyes opened in new ways. Number 10, hope is a basis, not a substitute for action. Pray, but move your feet. It's one of those things where I believe that prayer energy is profoundly important and can change the world in a second. But I also believe that that prayer energy shifts and changes me so that the next thing I do can maybe be a little kinder, a little wiser. And so if all I did was hold it in here and not be willing to embody it, what good is it? It'll help a little bit. But to actually physically embody it is what gives it power. Maya Angelou, in I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, says this. She believes in hoping for the best, being prepared for the worst, and unsurprised by anything in between. Do it and just see what happens. Number 11. If you embody what you aspire to, then you have already succeeded. That's the old saying that I remember from years ago, fake it until you make it. And the other thing that I really believe is that even if you take a small step in the right direction, it makes all the difference in the world because your focus is different. What you see before you is slightly different. It's not what we're encountering, it's how we're responding. And if you can choose to embody hope, that will make all the difference. And you don't have to do it alone because that divine presence is there. From the famous Anonymous, "The winds of grace are blowing all the time. We only have to raise our sails." So if you're feeling in despair or stuck, remember, you can raise your sail and the wind of spirit will help you realize you can move forward, and that simply by raising the sail, you are embodying the presence of hope. Number 12 is one that's specifically good for me. Total victory is not the goal. We mustn't be perfectionists. That's one of my soul growth angles, is perfectionism. And it's like we talked about last week, it's about spiritual practice, not spiritual perfection. H. Emily Cady says, practice like you would a violin. The first time you pick up a violin, you're not going to be able to play something beautiful like Ida does. Unless you were a virtuoso in a previous lifetime and you didn't get dipped in the river long enough. But as you learn, you play. And as you play, you learn. And so it's allowing yourself the grace to learn through and whatever pace works for you. And this is one of my favorite ones. I've used this many times before. It's another anonymous. This life is a test. It is only a test. If this had been real life, you would have received further instructions as to where to go and what to do. We don't know everything. That's why we're here, to explore and to learn. If you knew everything, you wouldn't be able to find the wonder and magic of the world that comes when you realize that divine presence is always there. So you didn't get all the instructions you might have wanted, but what is essential is invisible to the eyes. Antoine Saint-Exupéry writes in The Little Prince, one of my favorite books, only with the heart can one see rightly. And in the Hebrew scripture, it reminds us the truth is writ upon your heart. So total victory isn't even the goal. The right next step is more than enough. Number 13, if you're losing hope, do more before giving up. There is a relationship between engagement and hope, between disengagement and despair. Be honest. Our first saying in our church mantra is be authentic. I believe that that is so important, to be authentically where you are and know that you are loved on the journey of your soul. Whether you're at the top of the mountain singing in celebration or you're weeping in the bottom of the valley, the presence is there for all of those. So don't lose hope. Many people tell me that, well, they said prayers, and they put out the prayers, and it didn't respond. And I said, did you wait and watch? Well, no, I just said the prayer, and then I looked around, and it wasn't there. Well, we live in a pretty dense world, and so it can happen in an instant, but usually it's a process. And so if you can allow yourself to embrace the process and not perfection, I promise you it has made all the difference in my life for me to shift to that, where I can be authentically in process rather than the perfectionist I thought I had to be when I was young. Number 14. Recognize and account for our mind's negativity bias. Our tendency to weigh negative things more heavily than positive things. Seek the positive. Isn't that true? We tend to be so critical of ourselves. Oh, if only I'd done this, if only I'd said that. And we tend to focus on that, and that's why affirmations and denials are such powerful tools for those of us in unity. We can deny the power and gently release that which isn't working for us, the negative, and we can embrace then with a gentle touch that doesn't cling, but rather embraces with open hands and open arms and open hearts one another and ourselves. The quote for don't lose hope before giving up, by the way, comes from A Course in Miracles. If you knew who walked beside you on the path that you have chosen, fear would be impossible. I love that one. And to go to the thing about our negativity bias and seeking the positive and balancing things, I come from a highly philosophical source, Calvin and Hobbes. Don't you love Calvin and Hobbes? And Hobbes is saying to Calvin, it's not denial, I'm just selective about the reality I accept. What reality are you accepting? And finally, number 15, we stand on the shoulders of giants. Remember, others have gone before, showing the way. Maya Angelou, in her great wisdom, says this: we are braver and wiser because they existed, those strong men and strong women. We are who we are because of who they were. It is wise to know where you come from and who called your name. We're part of this evolving consciousness. The Bible finally made sense to me when I went and studied Bible at Unity Village, and they'd said it's the story of humans' progressive consciousness about their understanding and connection with God. It's not that God changed. It's our understandings that change and evolve over time. And not only have those have gone before, like Dorothy Curtis, she's in spirit now, and I know she's inspiring me this morning. We take those gifts that we have been given, and rather than clinging to them, we can receive them, appreciate them, and then have the hope to be able to release them and pass them on to others who are yet to come. Because there are others who will come after us. And whether we know it or not, in this moment, we are the giants upon whose shoulders they will stand. When I spoke at Jimmy Twyman's conference of the Psychic Children Orlando, back when I first came up here, I did a talk on the Psychic Children and Mary Magdalene in Mystical Christianity. And place they ended up having to bring in all kinds of extra chairs. I was really nervous and then just couldn't believe the response. But the coolest thing was a couple of these beautiful crystal indigo children came up afterwards and they said, some of you got to come before us to prepare the way. And one of the things that I mentioned in my talk was a passage from a book that has been out of print forever that was originally crafted, according to records, in like the 12th century. And it had to do with the Arthurian legends. And it talked about how when the children that became part of this whole Grail story, the men and the women, the souls of all of the different characters, Arthur and Guinevere and the Ladies of the Lake and the Knights of the Round Table, they all came and approached Cornwall off the coast of England in a ship of light. And Merlin went out on the cliffs overlooking the sea and stood there and held the light so they knew where to come ashore. And it said they came across moonlight to Merlin, and then he escorted them into their lives that became the Grail legends that I've studied and loved all of my life. There were those who were standing on the shore before we were all born to welcome us and to have done their part to improve the world before we got here. We have stood on the shore and welcomed children and grandchildren. Bianca's getting ready to go see her new grandbaby. And so these children are the ones that we have been called to be the beacons of hope for, to stand on the shore and welcome. And then when the time is right, we'll go back to spirit. And I think at some point, once again, we'll be on one of those ships of light where someone who's come after us will welcome us should we decide to return to do more soul work in this realm. It's about simply being willing to be that presence and remembering that this life, it's not about going to the grocery store. It's about being kind to the people you encounter there. Let us pray. Sweet, sweet Spirit, we open in willingness to be the morning stars, to be the light bearers. We open to embrace the power and presence of hope. We are with one another in compassion when we are in despair, sitting side by side, holding the light of hope for ourselves, each other, and for our world. May each of you feel and know at depth the importance of your presence in our shared world. You are here for a divine reason that blesses you and your soul unfolding and equally blesses the world at the same time. Embodied spirituality is the theme of this year, and that is what we seek to be and do. Blessings to each of you. You are so loved. We behold the light of the Christ in you. We love you and we bless you, and we are so grateful you are in this world with us. And a special sweet blessing to Dorothy Curtis. May she feel how her light continues in this world. And may each of us know that as well. We go forth blessed in blessing. Om, amen, and blessed be.